Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host, and we're going to talk about astral traveling again. Some of you are very excited about it, would love to do it yourselves, so would I, and it's always wonderful to talk with people who are able to do this and have wonderful stories about their adventures in astral dimensions. So we're going to speak again with Garnet Schulhauser, who has written a few books, the most recent, Dance of Heavenly Bliss. He was on the show in March and has come back again because I really want to talk more about his adventures out in other universes, well, let's say other dimensions, and these are guided. He has, and we talked about in this last show, that he has a guide who, Albert, who actually brings him out there and travels around and introduces him to all these situations. So, Garnet, welcome to Energy Stew.
Me, Peter. I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, well, I'm so glad that we could talk about this again because you're fascinating. And a lot of people don't understand the opportunities that exist to do the kind of work you do and where you can travel to and what you can see. Your books are so fascinating because it's even hard to imagine that a lot of this exists in the first place. Not only the travel, but where you're taken to and what you're introduced to and the people that you meet out there, both other planetary, this planetary, famous people from the past. Where would you like to start? What travel?
One of the things, you know, and I don't think we spoke about this in our March show, was I had a very interesting visit with Albert to another planet in our galaxy that also has a human civilization, because I had asked him before if humans were restricted only to the planet Earth, and he said, oh no, there's human civilizations all over the place. Some of them are quite, you know, much different than the one we have on Earth. And he said, I'll show you one just to show you the contrast between how that society exists versus the one on your planet. And so off we went to a planet called, of course, we're traveling astrally with my spirit guide, and of course astral travel is virtually instantaneous. You can sort of like, you know, I don't know how to do it myself, but Albert would sort of take me along with him, and he could just visualize where he wants to go, and suddenly we're there. So anyway, this planet, it looked like much like Earth, sort of similar atmosphere and climatic conditions and so on. And we touched down near a city. It was a very modern city with sort of like very modern towers and buildings, and there was a, you know, flying cars overhead and moving sidewalks and all kinds of things that you might imagine from a science fiction movie about the future on Earth. The place was populated with humans, and there was males and females, and the females all wore a certain kind of uniform, and the males another kind. And we proceeded to go to the main palace, the main seat of government for this planet. And there we met with the Empress, the reigning Empress at the time, whose name was Marpesia, and we had a conversation with her, and of course, she was in physical form, we were in astral form, but she could communicate with us by telepathy. Albert basically arranged that so she could see us and hear us, and so she had a fascinating tale. She said that their planet, which is all, you know, governed by humans, is a very matriarchal planet governed by women, and she explained that men are not allowed to vote or to have any position of power or management. Men basically have no say or control in what happens in their society, so the women run everything. They're the politicians, they're the people who govern, they're the ones who basically run the planet and have all the positions of authority. And she says that this results from the fact that all males at the age of 3 are basically chemically sterilized so that their testosterone levels are basically non-existent or you know, almost zero. And she says that because of this, the men are very docile and compliant, but she says the men are not subjugated, they're not abused, you know, by the women. They're free to sort of live happy lives where they can you know, pursue artistic or recreational activities, just enjoy life. And because they were sterilized at such an early age, they don't remember ever having their sex drive, so they don't really miss it. And so that's how their society is run. And she says that the obviously the men and women don't form marriages or units, and all the babies are incubated artificially using sperm from a sperm bank, which is supplied by a few males that are not sterilized to raise that weight to contribute to the sperm bank. She says that they have a very amicable, you know, society, very very harmonious society. She says the women sometimes have disagreements, but they're usually able to resolve them in a friendly fashion. So there's no violence, there's no crime, no wars, none of the things that we often see on Earth here. So it was a very civilized, very harmonious society. And she said that the men are not, unlike men on Earth, they're not aggressive, they don't fight, they don't cause any troubles because of the very low testosterone levels. And she says that way back when, many eons ago, their society was a patriarchal society, much like Earth, which was ruled by, you know, violent and abusive men who subjugated the women and had conflicts, had wars. There was lots of crime, you know, many of the things that we see on our planet. And she said that one day, one of their women had a vision and a dream where she was told that there was a plant that grew in the forest that, if ingested by the men, would drastically reduce their testosterone levels. And so this woman secretly harvested this plant, spread the news secretly to all the other women who fed it to their men, and gradually over a number of years, the men became, you know, less dominant, became more docile because of his low testosterone levels, and eventually the women just took over, and that's where they are now. So they have a very matriarchal society, very harmonious and peaceful. That's how they run their society. And so it was very interesting, sort of almost 180-degree turn from where we are on Earth with our very patriarchal society. Certainly shows you that humans can develop societies and civilizations in very different ways. You know, I left her thinking, Peter, you know, that was a matriarchal extreme, and I wondered if there wasn't some happy middle ground in between the extremes of that society and the extremes of our society, where we could have something in the middle where men and women were equal in all respect and still had the same harmonious civilization. So anyway, something to think about. The funny thing was, as I was leaving the planet, I said to Albert, has this civilization ever visited Earth? And he said, no, they had not yet. They're very advanced technologically, but they had not yet developed to travel between star systems. So they hadn't visited. And I sort of breathed a sigh of relief, thinking, well, I was afraid I'd have to run back to Earth and warn all the men about them in case we all end up singing like the Vienna Boys Choir.
Well, yeah, there's a great imbalance in that society out there. And I'm wondering what the women do with their own sex drives. They must have still have some. And there's probably some things you weren't told.
Yeah, no, I mean, I wasn't given sort of the total picture. But what she did say about the sex drive, she says that women will have sex among themselves if they choose. Some women choose not to, some do. But they clearly don't have sex with the men because the men have no sex drive and aren't really capable of performing, you know, sex acts. So that's how they handled their sex drive, I guess, was basically among themselves, among the women. You know, a lot of people on Earth will shake their heads and say, well, that's a very strange way of doing things. But it seemed to work for them, Peter. They seemed to have a very happy society. And so that was a very sort of an eye-opener about how a world run by women, human women, could differ from one that's ruled by men on our planet. And I just think that you know, certainly for our planet, I don't hope that we ever get there, obviously. I'm a male, and I wouldn't want to be in that situation. But I think we really have to think about trying to get closer towards where we have an equal balance between men and women on our planet. And also, the other obvious thing is to try to get men, violent men, to quit their abusive ways and live in a more harmonious sort of way with the people around them. So that's that part of the their society. I really like the peaceful, harmonious existence. Obviously, I didn't like the fact that the men were basically you know, cut out of the picture. But that's how they managed to run their planet. So there's another look at how things can develop for human civilizations in our galaxy.
There's probably no end to the variety of planets out there of civilization. Humans have been seeded all over the universe, and other life forms too that are semi-human and reptilian, all kinds of different highly conscious life forms, and take on different strategies and have different cultures. So I'm sure that, you know, everything is everywhere. You know, there's an opportunity in the whole universe for all kinds of variations. And here I do think that we are coming into a greater period of enlightenment, and that we will be able to see and understand the imbalances as we're moving forward. and start to modify it. I don't think our civilization has a chance to survive the way it's going. We really do have to learn from all of these other realizations that we'll soon have more of, and your books are certainly helpful in giving us more opportunity to see what our choices could be.
Yeah, absolutely. That was all of my trips where I go to different planets, Peter, or meet different souls on the spirit side are all designed by Elbert to provide some sort of a nugget of wisdom or provide us with a lesson. You know, so he's got a very set agenda. He doesn't take me on these trips just to amuse me. And so when he wants me to go and see things and write about them in my books, and so that's his whole agenda. And he, you know, and part of it, as you mentioned, is that, you know, I've seen a few other civilizations in different planets, and you're right, there's different human civilizations, there's different life forms that are very intelligent, you know, reptilian, you know, I met a bunch of spider-like creatures on a planet that I described in my second book. You know, I met, you know, some alien greys, you know, on a UFO orbiting Earth on one of my trips, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. Like, you know, there's just a, you know, millions of different kinds of civilizations through our galaxy, not to mention all the other galaxies and universe and all the other dimensions. So, you know, it's like Shakespeare said, there are more things in heaven and earth that are dreamt of in your philosophy. So we're just scratching the surface. But anyway, I'm happy to do these journeys with Elbert. And I'd like to just tell you about another interesting trip that I had. This is actually on the spirit side where we went to the Akashic Records. And that, of course, is the Akashic Records are the records of every life that's ever been lived in the universe.
It's a giant computer.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, and it's in a building, and you go into a what I call a viewing room, and there's a big holographic globe sitting there floating in the middle of it, and Elbert knows how to work it, and it just shows you pictures like watching a 3D movie. And you can sort of see, and I've seen some of my past lives there, a few glimpses, but you can see anybody's past life or anything else that's ever happened anywhere in the universe. And so this one fascinating scene I saw was basically the building of Stonehenge. And Stonehenge, of course, has been a fascinating historic monument relic, you know, for many centuries where people go to visit it. They wonder how it was built, who built it, why did they build it? You know, it's a very fascinating sort of topic. Still is today, actually. So what I saw was he showed me basically how it was built, and he said, and part of this was it was one of my past lives as a Druid priest on the Salisbury Plain in England about 3000 BC. So as I'm watching the scene unfold, my character, the Druid priest back then in that life, had a vision one night in a dream where he was told to go to one particular section of the Salisbury Plain and await for a messenger, and so he did that. And the next morning, and he noticed a spaceship sort of dropping down near the Earth, and it hovered about 3 feet above the plane. And out came what was basically a human, but a larger human than existed then. It was about 8 feet tall, very good-looking specimen. His name was Mogons, and he came from a planet in the Andromeda constellation. And he told me that he wanted me to enlist the help of the villagers in the nearby village to build a navigation beacon, and he said this navigation beacon was going to be used to help ships navigate or find out where they were when they were in warp drive. And so he had rolled a parchment, very detailed drawings of what he wanted built, and instructions of how to do this. And so then I enlisted the villagers, told them that Mogons was basically a god who had come down to ask them to build a temple for him. And so with the help of laser cutting tools and anti-gravity wands that Mogon supplied, the villagers and I were able to, you know, cut the stones that eventually went into the Stonehenge, and then using the anti-gravity wands, transporting them many, many, many miles to the current Stonehenge site, place them in precision in accordance with his drawings, and then when all that was done, he placed a power box in the center of it. I'm not sure what was in the power box, but it supplied power to the thing. And there it was. So there was his navigation beacon. The villagers thought it was just a temple to worship the gods, and that's how they used it. And then several hundred years later, he came back, removed the power box because the beacon was no longer needed, and left with it. But the stones were still there, at least the ones that are still remaining. And so that was the story of how Stonehenge was built, which really solves a lot of the issues that people have been struggling with, like how could these primitive people in 3000 BC, you know, quarry these large stones and transport them many, many, many miles from where, from the quarry to Stonehenge and put them in place? There's the answer. You can do many things if you have help from friends from the stars. So that was a fascinating scene from our Earth's past.
Right, and I think that's probably true for other locations around our planet involving pyramids, etc.
I think that's true. I mean, I didn't see anything else other than the Stonehenge thing. Albert, basically, I asked him that question, you know, like, were the pyramids and other things built in a similar fashion? And he didn't directly answer it, but he said, yes, I mean, most of these structures were built with the help from our friends from the stars, you know. You know, the current day archaeologists don't want to even countenance that factor happening because, of course, there's no proof of alien life anywhere else in our galaxy or, you know, very intelligent life. And so they don't want to subscribe to that theory at all because they have no proof of it. But he said someday they will figure it out and they will know that, you know, we had help from very intelligent aliens to help us build these structures. So,
right.
You know, and there's lots of them all over the world, as you know, Peter, you know, we had a helping hand along the way for many, many centuries.
Right, and I just did a radio show recently about Sumerian tablets that actually depict help from ETs in building structures, etc. So, interesting. Now, there are other life forms, not only in our solar system, but what happened when Neil Armstrong went to the moon?
Well, that was an interesting story, because I met Neil, you know, he passed away, I don't know, in the last about 4 or 5 years, I can't remember when it was, but I met him, the soul that was Neil Armstrong on Earth, had a brief visit with him, and he had an amazing story. He said that when he landed on the moon, when the Eagle first touched down, he suddenly received a telepathic message, you know, from an intelligent alien. And the message was, "Hi Neil, welcome to the moon." This person said that she was from a different planet. They had a base on the far side of the moon. It was well concealed. They'd been monitoring activity on Earth for a long time. And she basically said, "This is a big step for humanity. You know, welcome to the moon. Wanted to tell you that we're here watching you guys, but we're very benevolent. We mean no harm." And she said, "You know, I caution you not to tell Mission Control or Buzz Aldrin about the conversation because they'll think you've lost your mind. So it's best if you keep it secret." And so he did. He didn't mention it. And then to verify that he wasn't just hallucinating or dreaming this, when first went down the ladder, the first step on the moon, he stepped down and then he walked a few steps away. And there he saw a message written in the dust on the surface of the moon. And it basically said, "Welcome to the moon, Neil Armstrong." And he quickly brushed out the message in the dust with his boot before Buzz Aldrin got down there. But that was just sort of confirmation to him that what he had heard was real. I mean, it was a real conversation. And so he told me that when he got back to Earth, and obviously in the rest of his life on Earth, he did not tell anybody about this because, you know, he had a great legacy. He was the first man on the moon. He was famous for that. And if he brought this story out, he thought a lot of people would think, well, poor old Neil has gone senile and he's would have been a smudge on his reputation, so he didn't tell anyone. But he did tell me about it on the spirit side. You know, his soul was had returned, of course. And he says that he has since looked at the Akashic records about that episode, and it was clearly a conversation he had telepathically with this alien creature that had a base on the moon. So it was fascinating. I mean, it just shows you that there's another example of someone who's had a very direct encounter with alien life. You know, and some people will come public about it. Neil, obviously, for obvious reasons, chose not to. But it was very interesting, and it was like someday that fact may become an open reality. But right now, you know, he told me, I put it in my book, most people will probably dismiss it, Peter, but, you know, that's life.
Yeah, well, there's a lot that people can't understand about what you do. And fortunately, there are a bunch of us who really do appreciate it. And I do know other astral travelers. And also, I'm going to do an interview next week with a doctor who, during his surgery, went out of body and was met by a guide and traveled around out there and then came back when the surgery was over and he was conscious again on the operating table. And changed his whole life. He actually stopped being, he was a surgeon who was very successful, but he decided to become a healer, a spiritual healer, because of that astral travel experience. But thousands of people have had these near-death experiences and have reported on them. And so it's a much more common thing to understand now that so many of us, given the circumstances, yours is unusual because you didn't have to be on an operating table to be able to get out there. And there have been other astral travelers on our show who also, through meditation, just through being in a quiet state, can all of a sudden transport. Robert Moss, who he calls himself a dream archaeologist, is also, and he actually travels with groups of people together. And they astral travel together, and then they come back and talk about their trips together. And that's amazing, too. So there's really, it's very substantial what you're doing, and has a lot of history around it. And so that's why it's so exciting to understand all the opportunities that you've been given to do this work.
Yeah, and I'm very excited about my opportunity to astral travel with Elbert, and I'm very actually flattered that he chose me to be sort of his messenger to travel with him and write books about it, and so very happy to do that. And you are right, there are more and more people who do travel astrally. They feel comfortable going public about it. Certainly a lot more people who describe NDEs. I'm not sure if there's more people having NDEs or just more people who are being open about it. But, you know, 30 years ago, Peter, you wouldn't have heard many people talk about astral travel or even NDEs, I mean, because it would have been regarded as being kind of a very strange and sort of a, people would wonder about the sanity of the people telling these tales. But now these days, there's more and more people telling it. It's becoming more prevalent, and there's more and more people who believe that, yes, it is possible to astral travel, and that people who have NDEs have actually left their bodies and gone to the spirit realm and then come back for a purpose, and more and more people who believe in that our souls are eternal and that we continue to exist after our physical bodies die. So it's all part of an awakening process. The whole process is designed to help human civilization sort of get over this crucial point that we're in, and because if more people understand who we are, where we came from, where we're going, there's more of a propensity to stop abuse and violence and crime and hate and all the other negative emotions. And so that's really where spirit is trying to get us to, is to try to change our ways so that we can sort of get over this hump and survive as a civilization. So it's really quite amazing, and I know there are so many more people who are experiencing this, and it's all for a purpose. It's all to change their lives and to help them change other people's lives for the positive.
Right, and so you're still traveling. I mean, you have 3 books out there now, and 4th on the way, I'm sure.
Yeah, the 4th book, I finished the manuscript for my 4th book in early July, sent it to my publisher. They're still reading it, and they have to make a decision whether to publish it or not. I'm hopeful that they will, and if they make that decision, it'll be released sometime in 2017. And book 4 is part of the ongoing saga I have with Elbert, so book 4 is more astral traveling with Elbert. I go to different places, meet different people, learn different lessons, so it's all a continuation of Elbert's messages to the world that he gives to everyone through my books, and so it's really pretty much the same sort of a pattern, but all different information. It's all totally different. He never takes me to the same place twice, and every place he takes me to is interesting, fascinating, and there's always something to be learned from it.
Oh, you're so fortunate. Most of us are stuck on this mundane plane.
Well, I am most of the time too, Peter. Just when Elbert chooses to come and take me on astral travels, and I get to see a different glimpse of the universe and other planets and people on the spirit side. But the rest of the time, I'm still slugging it out one step ahead of the other here on this planet. Of course, now I know what's going to happen to me when I die, so I'm very comfortable with that. But in the meantime, I still have to deal with the day-to-day stuff that everyone else has to deal with, and that's just part of a life on Earth.
Right. That's what we've chosen to be here for. And has Elbert taken you very far into the future?
No, he has not. He says that glimpses into the future are reserved for only a few very advanced souls, and that souls who are still incarnating on the dense planes are usually not permitted to do that, because that would or could influence sort of their future incarnation plans and what they plan to do in terms of their development and evolution. So most souls are not allowed to see that. He has not taken me to see the future, I've seen a lot of things in the past, but the future is sort of off limits for me and for most other souls who are still incarnating on the earth plane. He did say that there are some psychics and mediums on earth who can get sort of vague glimpses into sort of certain aspects of a person's future, but that's not etched in stone. As he said, they will see what's the most probable set of events for somebody in the future, assuming that all things remain on course. And he said a lot of the times that doesn't happen because things change. People don't continue on in the ordinary course, and sort of the most probable event that they foresee doesn't happen. And so he says, you know, sometimes psychics can be dead on in terms of what they predict for somebody's future. Other times they're just way off base, and so it's sort of hit and miss. But in terms of the actual etched in stone future, nobody that's currently on the earth plane can see that.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I'm hoping that we do have a lot of ETs showing up sometime soon publicly and help us understand the universe better and even who we are in the universe. But all we get to see are them flying around.
Yeah, well, Albert says that that's going to come. He didn't say when. He wouldn't give me a time frame. He says no doubt in some point in our future there would be open and direct contact from the ETs with all the humans on Earth. And, of course, right now they've had some very secretive contacts with some of our governments. They've had, you know, contacts with some of the UFO abductees, of course, that we all read about. But it's been very sort of discreet and, you know, one-off sort of contacts. And he says that they will make themselves known to everyone when the time is right.
Okay.
And so but what's been happening in the last while, though, of course, the last number of years, is that there are more and more UFO sightings. And that's very deliberate. They're sort of showing themselves more often to more and more people. And I saw a recent poll, I can't remember where it was taken, where something like 70% of the people in this country believe that there was alien life elsewhere in the universe. And so a lot of humans are really already prepped for this moment.
Yeah, and you're helping.
And when the time comes, most people will say, yeah, I already knew that was coming, so no big deal.
Yeah, that's good. So we're actually at the end of the show. Garnet Schulhauser, the author of Dance of Heavenly Bliss and two other previous books. Is there a website?
Yes, there is. My website is garnetschulhauser.com, which is hard to remember, but if you Google Dancing on a Stamp or Dance of Heavenly Bliss, you can get to my website. There's information on all my books and my contact information and buy links and so on, so that's a good source of information.
Garnet, thank you so much. It's always great talking with you. I hope we can talk again soon. I really appreciate you being on Energy Stew.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Peter, and I hope to do it again.
Good, thank you. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.